Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This episode of Nintendo Voice Chat is brought to you by Gamefly. Gamefly is a way to buy and rent all your favorite games while saving money. Go to Gamefly.com, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Go to Gamefly.com/NVC and start your free premium 30-day trial today. Nintendo!
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of May 18th, 2017. I'm your host, Jose Otero, and coming up on Nintendo Voice Chat, we've got the games we've been playing. We're going to talk about Thumper. We're going to talk about Ultra Street Fighter 2, the Final Challengers. Then we're going to transition over to something new. We have an interview with Patricia Somerset. She is the voice of Zelda in Breath of the Wild. And then finally, we're going to come back around and give you our thoughts about ARMS, the ARMS Direct, and Splatoon 2's campaign trailer, which was really cool. Joining me this week, I have Brian Altano.
Hello.
I have Per Schneider.
Howdy.
And, of course, just a little bit of housekeeping for you. Please keep in mind that you can watch NVC on IGN.com's front page. Just click on the Shows tab, head down to NVC, Nintendo Voice Chat. You'll find it right there. Or you can find us, if you're watching us on YouTube right now, you can actually see the full episode of this show on youtube.com/NintendoVoiceChat. Make sure that you come check that out. And if you're on podcast services, leave us feedback. Send us an email, nvc@ign.com, or just through iTunes, through whatever you're using. If there's a feedback message, send it to us. Let us know what you think of the show. So let's kick things off with what games we're playing. And do you guys want to start with Thumper or with Street Fighter 2, Ultra Street Fighter 2?
Ooh, I'm playing both, so.
Okay, which
can
one
we talk
you
about Street Fighter 2?
We can
talk about Street Fighter 2?
We can, yeah, no. Which, so Street Fighter then?
Well, there's a lot of secrets in this game you might not know about.
Oh, Street Fighter 2? Really? Yeah. Really? Yeah. That 30-year-old classic?
Yeah.
Silent Ken?
Let's start with Street Fighter 2 then.
Okay,
yeah,
fine.
We're here.
Let's do it.
I think this is a really cool, really sort of interesting package for Capcom to put together. It sort of falls in line with what they did for the Mega Man collection and what they did for the Disney Afternoon collection, which I played recently, in that it's this fantastic celebration of a game and a franchise that folds in all of the concept art and original packaging and just really cool stuff that you can geek around in. The options, the menus, all of that is fantastic. I think what's throwing me off on this game is two major things. One, the lack of a Switch D-pad, which I think is affecting me more than I thought it would. I'm making it work. You know, I'm still throwing my Hadoukens. And number two, the fact that this game is twice as much as those aforementioned games are.
Yeah. Mm.
So that said, I really do like this package and having it on your Switch along with like Minecraft and Mario Kart and Zelda and a bunch of other things and Tetris. Like, yeah, it's really starting to build a great library there. But
yeah,
what do you guys think?
I agree. I think my biggest concern with it, though, is that while Street Fighter 2 is a lot of fun and there have been some balance tweaks and changes, it's based on not the original but sort of a hybrid. It has some updates behind it. And if I was a more hardcore FGC player, I'd be able to point them out. But I will say, does feel a little bit like a minimal effort approach by Capcom, and it's something that I'm not sure I'm okay with. And what I mean by that is that, yes, like a lot of nostalgia plays today, it has a new art style and it has the original art style, and you can swap between them. And the new art style, actually, you saw for the first time a few years ago when you got Super Turbo Championship Revival, whatever. Like, I can't remember the full thing, but it was a Street Fighter 2 HD that was released on 360 and on PS3. And so a lot of these assets come lifted from there. And that's fine. But the way you swap between visual styles is a bit clunky. You have to go into the options menu in order to choose, rather than just straight off the versus screen, letting someone just make that call right there. Hey, which flavor do you want to play?
Right.
Which one do you want to go with?
Yeah.
I don't need it to switch in real time while I'm playing. I think that's distracting, and you don't want that, right?
Right.
Once you enter into a match, you've locked in, but at the start of one, why does this have to be complicated? Now, they were smart, though. The graphics are separate from the audio, so you could have new graphics, old audio, which I love.
Great. You can do a Hadouken or Hadouken.
Yeah, or Hadouken. That really long O that the Ryu adds.
It's spelled like O-U-O-U-O-U, Hadouken.
Yeah,
just like a chicken. It's awesome.
Trails, yeah. Rolls off the tongue. I love playing it that way.
Yeah.
But then... I mean, Way of the Hado, like, what is going on? That's what it's called,
right?
You
went right to the bad part.
So what is... Okay, so to set the table, this is a mode in Street Fighter, Ultra Street Fighter 2, the Final Challengers, where you basically can use the Joy-Con and motion gestures to throw Hadoukens, Shoryukens, Tatumatekdo kicks, and just live out the Street Fighter fantasy of your dreams.
Yep.
I don't know if I've been dreaming.
You got a little Christopher Walken at the end.
No, I'm still amazed at your monkey kick there, rendition there. That was nice. I think this was an experiment that went all right. And it's the thing, when I first heard about arms, right, and having motion control and 3D punches like that, I was like, no, please, because I'm so used to these failed Wii-style experiments. Like, I tried, man. It's like the game's showing you, this is how you throw a Hadouken, and you know, you do this and this and this. And it works one out of three times, or what's your success ratio? And like, I get it, it's supposed to not be that easy, but then it's not that fun because it feels like you're not in control.
Right.
So it's basically a sort of survival mode. Endless waves of enemies are coming at you, and you basically have to shoot your Hadoukens or your Shoryukens or your dual kicks. All that stuff. You try to basically survive through it. The way you do the kick, by the way, have you seen how you do the hurricane kick?
No, I don't think I got that far.
I think you have to like swipe to the right. right or to left. I don't like it. It's not reliable. It doesn't work. This is the reason why whenever someone tries something with motion control,
we can't have nice things. Yeah.
We can't have nice things. People get eyebrows arch immediately because they're just like, I don't trust this. Like, I've seen too many games like this that fail.
When you make anything ever, your question should be, who is this for? Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm like, who is this for? Because like the hardcore Street Fighter crowd are probably like, why would I ever touch this? You know, like once you throw a Hadouken and it doesn't work, then I give up. The casual Street Fighter crowd probably they don't care about this at all. So I guess you're down to maybe like children, yeah. Like kids.
Or you're servicing a publisher, a platform holder, and maybe Nintendo in the beginning said you got to have something special in this edition.
Yeah, you're totally
otherwise,
right.
It's just a remake of an edition that was already out, right?
You mentioned the two art styles. This is a very odd Street Fighter game because it actually has three art styles total, and one is the Street Fighter V one, which is very weird to me. So you've got the classic 16-bit, right? You've got the newer sort of HD remix version, and then you've got the Street Fighter V assets that are tilted in first person, so you're seeing Ryu's fists, and he's fighting like waves of like kind of nameless enemies.
Yeah.
It's very, very odd.
It's very shiny assets too at that. Yeah. Like you can tell they didn't want to commit too many resources to whatever they were trying to build. And this is not to say that maybe this package came together on a schedule, a very tight one. This was the best they can figure out in the time they had. We don't know how long they've been talking to Nintendo about it, but it's a lame product.
It is. And the weird thing is
very
like
lame.
When you play Smash Brothers, right? And Smash Brothers has a billion modes in it. And you get to some of the weaker ones. You like Target Smash. Don't get mad at me. I'm just bad at it.
I know.
But like the button for Target Smash isn't as big as the button for Smash Brothers, right? Mm-hmm. But on this menu, it's like it lists everything and Way of the Hado is the same as everything else is. It's just there.
It's the one unique thing. But if you ignore this mode, and I think everybody should try it just to be angry for a second, and then you go back to the core game and like Street Fighter, the reason why it's still so fun to play is that it's just so well designed, right? Yeah. And I hear you on the deep pad. It's not as fun with the split buttons. I play it with a pro controller. It works really well. Mm-hmm. It does. I've spent dozens of hours of playing it on the Super Famicom, on the Super NES when it came out back in the 90s, played it in arcades. I had a hard time pulling off some of the moves, even though they should be second nature, like Sonic Boom or any of these kind of classic moves. And it took me a while to get used to it on the Pro Controller because the D-pad is a little more raised too. You know, it feels a little different. Yep. But in the end, I was able to do it playing against my kids. It's really fun. This is the first time that they've been exposed to Street Fighter and they can see the glory of it as well. And
it has a really good few other pieces of fan service. It has the sort of limited release art book that isn't available today for sale.
Yep.
A lot of booty shots in that book, but overall, still
Japan.
But still a really cool piece of fan service for a Street Fighter fan, which I think is nice. And ultimately, if Way of the Hado wasn't part of it and would somehow bring the price down slightly, I'd say, yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah.
But I do think it's up to folks to kind of look at that sticker price and say, how do you feel about that? And make that decision.
I'm
not giving it a glowing endorsement, I guess is what I'm saying.
I really dug the sprite editor. I don't know if any of you guys dug into that, but in the options menu, you can go in and customize like each almost.
Oh, that is really cool. Yes.
I think it's down to like four or five sets of parts per character. And you can sort of be like, I want to make this like weird shadow Ryu with like a pink headband. Or I want to make like Ken, who's like entirely bright blue.
See, in my game, Latinos took over the Street Fighter universe. They're all tan. every character is now tan.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's beautiful. Like, I love it. Even DJ, we lightened him up a little bit. So yeah. he's with us.
And I noticed they got rid of the part where you beat up the car. Is that not a thing? Where is that? That should have just been there.
No, yeah. And I also wish that when you change the voices. So right now, whenever you switch to the old voices, it only applies to the characters themselves. So Chun-Li, Ryu, everyone who's been a part of it. Now they've got Violent Ken and Evil Ryu. They've got those guys as additions. But the announcer stays the same. And you got to remember, too. But I guess this is also a formality, right? Because they don't call it USSR anymore. It's now called Russia.
USSR.
Back in the day when you flew to fight Zangief. He said, USSR. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. I know, and I miss that. I've been doing those voices for years.
That's like the nostalgia play that I would have appreciated if they had gone the extra mile. Not like the USSR is going to sue you or anything for including that.
Well, it's just weird to be like, it's not realistic anymore. Yeah. Anyway, here's a man that throws fire.
You got
a flame. But, there's no USSR.
The main attraction for me, though, with this game is, and I can still play Street Fighter 2 on my Super NES at home, so I didn't really need it.
Right.
But having this game on the go again is pretty cool. And I do think that playing it with a sideways Joy-Con is surprisingly good. I tried it on our local Street Fighter aficionados, took it to Mark Ryan, Sully, some of the guys here, propped up the machine for them, and they played a bunch, and they liked it. The only thing is the two shoulder buttons.
Right.
Because you're mapping, you know, light, medium, strong punches and kicks to the six buttons on them.
Yeah, totally.
So you have to use, obviously, you have to use a stick instead of a D-pad, yep. And then the two shoulder buttons for the heavy punch and kick are tiny. And so the strap helps a ton. So if you take it on the go, bring the
I've actually found myself just throwing the Joy-Con straps in my case every time I travel with it now.
Yep.
Because there is that, like, you know, that off chance that, like, and I think it's stuff like Mario Kart, like trying to power slide in that game. I think I described it in the show as like trying to power slide with the volume buttons on your phone.
That's right.
Like, it's difficult, right? So, and those straps are tiny. Is there a way to just rip that damn rope off of them? I hate those ropes.
You don't like the strap? Yeah. I mean, for me, it makes it easier to not lose, but
Do you put it on your arms?
I hold one of them. I think it's just reflex, though. But
I will
say,
Nintendo demos.
Yeah, you kind of like train. Put the strap
on. Nintendo demos, they don't let you play unless you
put the strap on. Yeah, the minute you put it on first, they're like, oh, you did it. No, that's not right. Like, they notice when you, that's the first thing you do. I do wish that on future revisions of the strap, they find a way to make the L&R less springy.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like there is something that needs to get fixed there, because whatever the mechanism is that's pushing on the SL and the SR buttons, it doesn't respond as strongly as you would hope it would, and you kind of got to press hard.
You feel
harder than you feel. Yeah,
it's not a guarantee. Like, I mean, I noticed it in Mario Kart where I'm like, you hold a shell behind you, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes it would just release the hold, or other times I would go to hit it at the right moment to like sort of block a blue shell with that big, you know, music sound thing, and it didn't work. So that's definitely an issue. But yeah, you're right. Street Fighter is a 6-button game. It's cool. It's a cool novelty to sort of on the go. Be like, oh, pull my two Joy-Cons off the side, start playing Street Fighter.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what this game comes down to. Like, it's novel to have it with you anywhere.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this will ever replace anybody's like full-fledged Street Fighter time.
No, yeah, and it's not meant to. I think it is very much a nostalgia play for folks who just, they have kids now. That's how Capcom kind of looks at it when we talk to them too. They're like, oh, a lot of these players have kids. It just, to me, it falls into this very sort of light, like, just low effort approach, though. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Capcom did it with this. Namco's doing it with this arcade collection that's coming to this. Like, again, like, just going for the nostalgia play, going for that crowd. And I don't know. I want to see these publishers like bring like their A game to this platform.
Like the rare collection, for
Monster
example,
Hunter, you know, like,
you know what it is.
Oh, I see. You're saying not just re-releasing classic.
Right. Yeah. Although classic games are smart. I mean, the Disney Afternoon collection should have absolutely been on Switch. I think that was a complete misstep.
You know what it is?
Is the first Capcom game for Switch?
I think it will get there.
This is the first.
I think that opening. We've been talking about Nintendo Switch as a hybrid for so long, right? Mm-hmm. The handheld console hybrid. And I think there's a certain quality barrier that we at least hope for from major third parties when it comes to console games. And I feel like that is just like statistically lower for handheld games. Like, when the GBA launches, Namco's there to be like, oh, you guys want a F1 pole position for Atari? Oh, we got that. We got Dig Dug. We got all your best friends are here. So I think this feels like a game that would have launched with like the DS or the GBA or even maybe the 3DS, but it doesn't feel like a game that it would have put on like Wii U or PS4.
No, and it's definitely trying to be aware of the audience, right? Because you can't, I think that for a lot of publishers too, maybe they learned in the Wii era and especially in the Wii U era that the audience is not comprised of only hardcore gamers.
Right.
That there are, mm-hmm. you know, because Nintendo tends to skew younger and because Nintendo tends to skew to families, these are people who you may want to try something a little different to hook and approach. And I think there are successes and failures with that sort of attempt. But this to me, I will say it is good. I have fun with it. I will definitely play it on the weekends if I'm out and about. And, you know, like a friend and I go out and eat and we want to play Street Fighter and just settle it right there. Again, another example of
right there. Yeah.
Just handle it. Let's play this game. Let's get competitive.
I
like that about it.
I really feel like if this game, and I hate to like complain about price stuff, but if this game was half the price, it would have been would be a no-brainer for me to be like, sure. Yeah, you get Street Fighter everywhere, and it's got new graphic styles, you can change its sprites, and there's blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But at $40, it becomes like a, well, how much do you really love Street Fighter, mm-hmm. you know?
Same thing with Bomberman, but at least the post-launch support for that game has been much better.
Yeah.
That thing even has Silent Hill DLC. That blew my mind.
That's really crazy.
Okay, let's talk about Thumper then, which is by, I believe the developer is called Drool.
Drool.
This was a PlayStation VR launch game.
Played it.
Can play with VR or without on PlayStation 4 or your PlayStation 4 Pro. Now on Switch, this is a rhythm action game unlike anything you've played before. And I will say that as someone who really loves that genre and has a lot of investment in it, where Rhythm Heaven is sort of the quirky, the offbeat, even the humorous, this is one of the most tense, uncomfortable environments I've ever been in while playing a music game.
Yeah.
It's very gothic, it's very industrial, the music is a lot of like metallic and bashing sounds, and when you die especially, it's just like this violent explosion, the whole screen just right. catches you off guard. I feel like if I had to, it's like signing up for a music class, but it's the meanest teacher you've ever met in your life. That's what it feels like to me as someone who really like loves that genre.
Yeah,
I want to hear your experience.
No, it's just really stylish. Like when I saw Chloe originally playing it for review for the PSVR, I'm like, what is that? Is this some sort of Scarab roller coaster simulator? Like it has that kind
what
of
it
like,
looks like.
It has this kind of Guitar Hero like scrolling setup mm-hmm. on a track and all that. But then of course there stuff starts happening. No, it just has this cool metallic look, and it sounds, especially when you're wearing headphones, it sounds just really really cool.
Yeah. It's sort of got the rhythm platform ish feel of like a Bit Trip Runner game.
Yeah,
but with all of the candy shell color. Is just stripped right off. This game is it's a threat.
Fight bosses and they're like these ugly sort of foreboding targets that
with
like
tentacles swirling everywhere and like, you know, I played this game on PSVR at launch and it's terrifying. Yeah. Like and it's one of those things where it feels like a fever dream. Like when those nights where you're sick and you're like, I'll have some NyQuil and go to bed in the middle of the night, you're like, oh my God.
That's what you see?
Yeah, my brain's a wreck. So
centipede whatever. Sorry.
And I adored this game on PSVR. And when I first, my knee jerk reaction to hearing it was coming to Switch was like, oh, well, why?
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? This is a PSVR game. It makes perfect sense in VR. And then I read some stuff about how it's 60 frames per second. Then I read about how it's 1080p in docs mode. Then I read about how they pulled the camera out a little bit, so it's easy to see the Scarab nightmare.
The HD Rumble stuff feels cool. It's
the HD Rumble
subtle.
Is great.
Yeah, like you feel it mostly when you lean from left to right. If you lean to the left side, you'll feel like light sparks at first, and the more you lean, the heavier that side gets. I think that's really cool. But on turns, and you especially feel it when you fire at a boss, it's sort of this buildup of energy, and it sort of begins, amasses around you, and then shoots straight forward towards the boss, and you feel that leave. Like, I almost cursed. You feel like it just, like some energy, some force just got sent out.
It's a better Hadouken than that weird mode in the last game we were talking about.
Nothing like that.
So primarily in this game, you're playing as this like shiny metallic beetle, right? This scarab looking thing. Mm-hmm. And as you take turns, you have to hit the A button to really lean into them at the right exact moment. You ride over these sort of like kind of like beeping, blinking light things that you can hit right at the right moment too. And getting the right ones shoots this projectile at bosses or enemies. Now, when you take a turn the wrong way, like too soon or too early or whatever, or too late, a layer of metallic skin rips off of your beetle. And it
violently.
Is like, it's violent. It's terrifying. I really love it. There is nothing like this on Switch right now. And there's really nothing like this in the rhythm genre, but specifically as a game to play on Switch, I love playing this game in handheld mode with headphones on, mm-hmm. with the screen like 3 inches from my face. It's not VR, but it's damn close, and it feels really cool. Like,
tape it to your glasses.
Yeah, you could do that.
And I noticed my hands are just grabbing the controllers a little tighter because of how uncomfortable it feels. We're talking about like using sounds that are almost like strings. So, you know, when you watch The Dark Knight, whenever the Joker was talking, you'd hear sort of the violin string. yeah, and it would just get louder and rise and rise. And there's this just sort of nasty energy that comes with it. And I'm not someone who necessarily feels something like that when I play video games. It just, it feels very uncomfortable, and it's very effective for something that's happening on a screen. I can only imagine with PlayStation VR, when you're in complete immersion, like in that space, like what that must feel like.
I'm happy to hear that you weren't the only one getting finger cramps from this game, because I was like, I think that's what it is. You're tense, and I'm holding, like, I didn't get this playing any other game on Switch, really, for the most part, but it, like, I would hold down that A button on turns like it was like I was driving on a highway going 200 miles an hour.
Well, and especially nailing like the perfect sort of hits, because you can sort of make a turn, right? You could even hold to the right side and just hold A and you'll just hit the turn because you're already leaning on that side. But the grace and the skill and the part of the game that is built for people like me who just like the perfection of the audio performance, you have to hit it at the exact right moment and you'll hear the sound effect changed. It is is noticeably different when you nail it with perfect timing versus if you just got it.
Right.
It's a hard game.
It really is.
It really is.
But one of the things I really do like about it is, I mean, we play so many rhythm games that are sort of like song-based, right? And you play a three-minute song and it ends, or they're level-based or structure-based. The level design in this game, they just flow right into each other, which I really, really adore. Like, you'll be playing the first level, and then you're like, this is a really long first level, and you realize you're on the fifth one, and you're getting graded in between them, but they all flow into each other. Mm-hmm. And then bosses pop up. There's like Omega bosses that are even harder. Like, I really think this is a really cool thing to see on Switch. It's exactly the kind of indie support I wanted to see on the system when we first heard about it. Games that I didn't think would work as handheld games are now really working as handheld games, and I think that's a really cool phenomenon to see.
I agree. And last thing on this, I'm glad it's out. Definitely recommend it, and it sounds like we all sort of agree. Yeah. Definitely worth checking out. I was a bit bummed that I don't think Nintendo's doing a great job of promoting this game.
Oh, no, I saw.
It's because it's from another platform, but you know, we get a weekly press release that sort of shows, hey, what's coming up on Switch. And obviously the big thing for them this week is a little game that's coming out that we're not going to talk about this week, but we're going to come back to next week, Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia. And buried in that press release somewhere is, oh yeah, and Thumper's out on Switch today.
It's like the fourth line from the bottom.
Just like, that's
and it
not
may have
cool.
been short lead time too. Maybe it arrived a little earlier than they expected, right?
If it's going to be your game a week, shout it from the rooftops, man. Like, that's your job.
There's still time,
you know?
Talk about it again next week.
I mean, I think that's like that's what it's all about, right? Like, you bought a new Nintendo handheld / console thing, and like, you know, you want to spend a couple bucks every week or two or whatever, spend 10-20 bucks like every couple weeks. Like, don't sleep on Thumper. Like, if Nintendo's not doing a good job of promoting it, like, here we are. Like, it's a really cool game, check it out. I noticed the exact same thing about that press release today, and it's like, what?
Yeah. Like, I have to look for it, at least in the U.S. I'm signed up for the Europe press release, and they actually did a better job of bumping it to the top.
Right.
But I was disappointed by that. I really think that there's more effort to be made in order to keep people being aware about Switch. Really quickly, I didn't build in Project Rat Rabbit into this, but since we're talking about a music genre game, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it briefly before we move on.
So this is, I mean, it's a little bit of a throwback to like the classic Parappa the Rapper, like rhythm game genre, right?
This is Nanon Shah, the Parappa the Rapper guys with Innes. This is the Owen Don Elite Beat Agents guys.
Guitaro Man as well, right?
Yeah, I worked on Guitaro Man as well. And they're making a game together with a rabbit that raps, but no gameplay, only concept art. And they want to raise money on Kickstarter.
There was a Switch stretch goal, which I think the entire campaign for the Kickstarter in general was very high, and they reined it in a little bit.
Switch stretch goal. 5 million for Switch. I think it's down to 1.5 million
now. Yeah,
I'm into it. I like the concept art. I miss this era of like sort of quirky rhythm games like this. I mean, Nintendo does them here and there, but I dig it. I feel like, and I said this on Beyond, but I was really hyped on the idea of Parappa the Rapper for a long time until I replayed the HD remake of it, and
oops,
I was like, ooh,
oops.
Yeah, I was like,
why did I stop the oops again?
Yeah, that didn't age so well. But then again, there's so much has happened in that genre since its inception that I think that like I'm open to this. I'm excited to see.
Hey, look, I mean, the Parappa lives off the music, right? The music in Parappa is still great. Like, every song is funny, the characters are quirky, and so that's a true test here. Like, will they be able to do
do the genre justice, not just mechanically, hopefully better than Parappa, but also with the music and the art.
They didn't release any music files or anything yet.
No, and
that's the best way to sell it.
Yeah, and also, like, or a demo even. Like, I feel like in today's world, after we've seen some Kickstarters that did not live up to expectation, stern glance at Mighty No. 9, stern glance at, there are others that are just not coming to mind.
I mean, even Yooka-Laylee let some people down, you know?
To a degree, although I think that game at least looks good. And my hopes are all pinned to Iga. Iga, if you're listening, please.
Bloodstained?
Yeah. Bloodstained. I forget the rest of the title.
Castlestania. Yeah.
Castlestania. Thanks. I just feel like for a Kickstarter in the modern era, you need to really bring your A game to promote and show people what it is. And I don't think they did that. So I won't be pledging. I will be cautiously optimistic and wait and see. If it comes out and it's great, I will absolutely reverse my decision. But I feel like if you were trying to sell me on this, I just don't think you did a great job.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you can only carry so much off of the nostalgia or the idea of something. I mean, when we saw the Kickstarter for like Shenmue 3, you're like, okay, I know what Shenmue 1 looks like and 2. 3, I have a good idea, maybe, hopefully. I mean, that game's still just a logo, right? And Yooka-Laylee was sort of just like, well, here's this team of people. Here's concept art. I mean, they already started putting it in. There's so much
more.
They had
some of an engine, though, to show you, too. They were like, oh, look at the... And the most amazing strut I've ever seen, by the way, the Yooka-Laylee and Yooka and Laylee looks fantastic.
Yeah, and Shenmue, I'm a backer, by the way, for like signed edition or something.
Oh, nice.
I just couldn't resist. Yeah. I love the original game. I played the European sequel too, not released in the US.
Yeah, I played that.
But with that game, at least you knew what the franchise was. You know exactly what the game is going to be, and you've got this game designer who hasn't been in the spotlight. And so it's kind of a cool story, whereas like with this one... you have to take a bigger leap of faith.
I think with Kickstarter, the publishers and game developers need to start treating the audience the way they would with a publisher, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if the three of us had an idea for a game and we were like, Nintendo, we want to make this game, I would hope that the three of us could get together more than just like a pitch and some concept art. Like, I would want to see an engine. I want to see something like to bring to that table, to sit down on Shark Tank or whatever the hell is the video game version of that, and be like, this is our game. You want something there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm a big believer in Nanon Shah, specifically Masaya Matsura, who I think changed everything when Parappa the Rapper came out. I mean, that is the equivalent of a video game musical to me, and I love it, and no one ever really did anything else with it. So to see an attempt, I'm excited for that. But yeah, we definitely have our thoughts on it. Let us know what you think, nvc@ign.com. Let's transition over to round two, where we're going to talk to, we have a special guest in the office, Patricia Somerset, the voice of Zelda in The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, was here, and we just had a few questions for her, sort of hearing about her preparation for the role, how she got the job, and a few other details. So why don't you check that out? Listen! Hello and welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, and this is a special interview segment. I'm here with the actor behind Princess Zelda in Zelda Breath of the Wild, Patricia Somerset. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This is cool because on our show we haven't had a chance to really talk to voice actors, so you're sort of our first, and I've been hoping for this for a while. Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah, and ironically, in your career, you're also you've taken on for the first time the role of a very iconic character in Princess Zelda. Before we get into sort of how you approach the role and sort of working with Nintendo, I wanted to ask you how you started out as an actor.
Oh my gosh. Well, I came to acting actually through figure skating.
Okay.
So I grew up figure skating from quite a young age, and I did a lot of, you know, Disney on Ice sorts of skits, and dancing was a really big part of my childhood, as was singing, I suppose. Yeah. So I think those were all sort of precursors to my acting career and just performance in general. But yeah, the competitive ice dancing eventually led to acting school.
Okay.
In my early 20s.
Okay. And this was up in Montreal or?
It was around the States at first, yeah. And then ultimately the acting school was up in Montreal.
Got it. Okay. And so then when did you sort of start doing voiceover work specifically then as part of that transition?
Voiceover specifically for actual projects. I think I've always been a bit of a parrot from when I was younger. That's something that I've always loved and been a bit obsessed with, doing jingles and that sort of thing. Yeah. But the voice work actually started when I was at school, when I was at my undergrad. I kind of just loved the classes where we had to put together our own demos and that sort of thing. So I kind of took to it right away and just started pursuing it while I was still in school. Mm-hmm. So by the time I graduated, I'd already done several projects for like little bits of radio and then, you know, working on little indie games and stuff like that.
Sure. But then you also worked on, if I remember your resume correctly, stuff like Assassin's Creed or...
Yeah, so that came a bit later after I'd been sort of working on voice work for a number of years.
And actually. Even For Honor, you have a character in there as well. Yeah,
yeah, I'm a Night Warden in For Honor.
Okay, okay.
Pretty badass game, yeah.
Okay, nice, nice. But then, so talk a little bit about then how you landed in this particular role with Zelda. Like, how did you learn about it? Like, did you know what you were getting into?
No, I didn't. I mean, it was pretty amazing to find out when I did figure out what it was, when it was broken to me that that was actually what I had landed. So, I mean, I just made a pretty fresh, like a full move to LA. It'd been something that I'd been thinking about going back and forth for a while. And upon doing that, I had submitted materials to different casting directors. And from there, you know, like motion capture demos and my little animation demo. And so I was invited in for an audition and I prepped the audition with my, you know, the description that I was given, went in, got a callback for that, several weeks later, went in for the callback, and then found out that I'd landed this role. And I was like, oh, awesome. This is fantastic. I'm so glad I made a great impression. And then I found out that it was Princess Zelda, like shortly before recording it. So that was kind of, it just flipped my universe a little bit.
Wow. Is that typical with sort of roles like this? Like, are you not told the specifics and it's just like, okay, here's the kind of character we want and we want to see if you can sort of do that or deliver
that? Very common in games just because secrecy is so important. And, you know, it's so easy for people probably to want to leak things. And so, yeah, it was all kept very under wraps. And that's often been my experience in a lot of the games that I've done. There's a lot of code names used and you stick with the nicknames and stuff. Yeah.
Do you remember what persona they wanted you to prepare for those very early sort of, you know, attempts at like just, okay, showing them what you can do?
Yeah, I don't think it really moved so much from what was ultimately, I think I showed them what they were sort of going for without realizing that's what I was doing. But, you know, it was a princess character of some kind. You know, the age was vague, except that she was young, but was an old soul, like those sorts of things. You know, weight of the world on her shoulders, like feeling the pressure of her family, composed, poised, strong, strong female, and royal. You know, so yeah, those were what I was going for, and those were you do see that description in a lot of different things. So yeah I didn't clue in. It's like, yeah, princess, this, that, yeah. And I was like,
okay. And then they finally tell you, and like, so I guess I should ask, like, did you have a prior connection to the Zelda series before this sort of appeared? And they're like, yeah, you're Princess Zelda for us in this game.
I mean, obviously I was very familiar with the Zelda series. And our first console in our house was Nintendo. So we played a lot of Mario Brothers was our main thing. We were crazy for Mario Brothers. We did a lot of the trackpad and duck hunting and those sorts of things.
Yeah, totally.
We just love that. And we definitely played the original Legend of Zelda. I've dabbled in other games like Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess. Those are the ones. And generally, like after getting the part, I was like, wow, I'm going to get my Hyrule Historia and start like looking into more of the complete lore and everything like that. So
got it. And does that sort of that then helps you sort of assemble a little more into that character, I assume? Like,
I mean, it does, but also like I guess as an actor, I go for the main human themes that I'm given. So I just really go more from a theater background. Like you look at the script that you're given, you do the research around it, and then from there you build like what the stakes are. What does your character want? What you know, what do they need? What are the relationships to their environment? And so those are the clues that I go from. Obviously, a lot of that is written into the history very much. Sure. But because there is new ground in this one, I really just go from like, what is the human perspective in this?
Yeah. So then, I mean, I think the biggest challenge I would think as an actor, though, is that this character has existed for 30 years without an actual voice. I mean, there's been a character voice through the written stuff that we've seen in games like Ocarina of Time or in games like Skyward Sword, but this was an entirely new dimension. Like, how do you prepare for something like that, for a character that's been around for so long?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, what I tried to do was just settle down and like see what was in front of me and be like, okay, the only thing that you can really do is your best. Inject it with as much life as you can and take direction in the room. And, you know, those are the things that you do when you're trying to make something feel human and that sort of thing. Cause like, if there are no voices to go from, obviously she's had like little grunts and sounds and stuff like that, but it wasn't really the direction that, they were intending to go with me. That's why they chose that voice. So yeah. you just got to trust that. You just have to trust, what you've been given and the team effort. And I did feel very well supported. So
nice. So then are there sort of different versions of the character you presented? For example, like is there one that is sort of a softer voice, one that's sort of a more determined, like, or did it just come together as, okay, we've identified it early, the exact character voice we want from you?
I mean, yeah, I can never be entirely sure how that happened. I haven't really been given that information afterwards. But what my experience was I think more of a testing of range of the dynamics of the complete voice. And probably, I guess, the grains and the timbres were something that they were seeking out. Because that didn't change a heck of a lot from when I first started into it. It's like I came in with an offering and for the callback, it was pretty similar. But it was more like testing different scenarios that the voice might be in and stuff like that.
So do you have a sort of a favorite scene?
I do have, I've narrowed it down to two scenes that I particularly
All right.
love.
Let's hear it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, spoiler alert, because I don't want to spoil anything, but obviously everybody, you know, so we'd have to be like, I won't talk about that. Yeah, I know, definitely don't want to spoil anything for anybody. So if anybody doesn't want to be spoiled, here's the time or whatever to turn it off. I'm a huge fan of the frog scene, I guess just because I grew up loving frogs as well. Kissed many a frog as a child right out of the pond. So I loved how she was so goofy and nerdy in that and really enthusiastic. And you saw part of her that was very light and just completely in her element. I loved that scene. And of course, the scene where she, you know, things come together for her and you see that she's going to be able to essentially unify herself. I'm trying not to like just state it out loud, but like, you know, that amazingly powerful scene where things come together and the music kicks in and she's, I guess, recording that was so phenomenal to do. It was like it was a real magical moment in studio, and just, you gotta feel for her. Like you're like, yes, thank goodness that came together. Obviously.
She has a very complicated relationship with Link in this game. I think more so than any Zelda game I've played before, where it's almost like they're adversaries for a little while, and then you see them sort of grow. I was just curious of your thoughts on that.
The bitter kind of cynicism of Link going out to do these things that she is not allowed or given the trust to do, and then her trying to access her own magic that she desperately is studying to try to find, and using science, all these things to try to make up for the fact that she is not whole, becoming herself. It's just so understandable. But it's got a nice dark tone to it, and it's very dramatic. I love that dimension of it. I mean, it makes it so much more human to have that relationship between her and Link. Yeah, it opens up a whole new thing, I think. Find words to describe.
It definitely surprised me, especially when you see that early cutscene where, she's sort of ordaining him, I guess, as a knight. And, you know, the champions are all talking about him and talking about how it's not the usual goings on between these two characters to someone who's a series fan. So I was just like, wait, what? Like, really? Like, this is how we're going to kick this off? Especially because, like, when you look at, like, the last game, there was a lot of admiration. They were almost like two students at Hogwarts, you know, who had feelings for each other. That's how the last game sort of framed them. Whereas this one, it was a bit different. Were there any difficult scenes for you? Like, scenes that it took a long time to figure out or just to land on what would make it work? Like, what were some of the more difficult scenes to maybe pull off?
That's a good question. It's funny because they don't necessarily stand out in my mind. Like, there's so many things going on in the room when you do a dub session like that. Mm-hmm. And it's not just you. It's also people technically, you know, piecing things together at the same time. So you're just constantly there, just trying to inject the best performance you can, When you're given the time to do it, and oftentimes that's like, you know, the computers go and they come back and people are trying to like sync something up, or maybe the dialogue might change a little bit, so then you have to re-examine it. I don't know if I had any particularly challenging scenes. I think just grasping the thing as a whole was, it was really epic at the time. And you really just kind of hope for the best when it's that large, and you just go, wow, I just hope I'm doing the best I can and that they're responding to it. And, I felt very supported in the process though. So, and the direction was pretty specific. It was pretty detailed. So,
okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of if there's any like particular moments, but there wasn't really. I mean, it all had technical challenges, and yeah, it was a very focused room.
Do they expose you to some of the other performances just as sort of a character study in a sense? And if so, which ones?
I got a few snippets of the Guardians as we went through.
Okay.
I got to play off some of the things that had been done previously, like, with my father. So by the time I recorded things with my father, some of those had been done. It was an emerging thing that had, And then as it went along, I was like, oh, there's the other characters.
Got it. So with the other actors, because these are usually solo sessions. What about the other versions of Zelda? Did you ever get to hear what they sounded like at all, just out of curiosity?
A little bit the Japanese version.
Okay, got it. And is that something used as a reference, or is something just so you're aware this is what it sounds like overseas?
A little bit of both. Like, it is a reference to some degree, but I mean, it was in quite a different direction from that one. So, yes and no. Like, there were different rooms to be in.
Yeah. you must have friends who are Nintendo fans who, like, after they found out you landed this gig, like, are they like hounding you for voicemail recordings or things like that? Like, open your eyes as a.
Yeah.
Like, what's it been like since?
I've been trying to avoid doing too much of that. Just to keep it all safe and copyrighted. You know, it's all copyrighted. It's not for me to do, really. But I've been geeking out with some of my friends for sure.
I still remember my reaction at last E3, because we're playing sort of the early build of the game, which is the start of the game. And you're greeted by this voice. And Nintendo was trying to be coy, too. They didn't want to, like, outright just say, oh, that was Zelda, at least when we saw it at first. And then they owned up to it. But it was like, oh, my God. Like, wait, what? Like, she speaks. She's a character now. And this is a big step for them, just given that they, it's always been more about the voice in your head.
Right.
Yeah. So then, have you been called back in yet to record any DLC?
If I could tell you anything like that.
Is that a
nice
straight
try.
Non-answer? Nope.
That's just a non-answer.
Okay, got it. Fair enough. But I would assume you're looking forward to it, because this is still part of...
I am looking forward to whatever they throw at me. But really, like, where I am with my career, I take what's in front of me and I go, this is amazing. Yeah. And I'm running with this right now, and I'm open and available and enjoying it and celebrating it. And then from there, I never know. So it's like, that's just how it goes. So I don't take anything for granted, and I'm always like cautiously optimistic about everything. So
it's a good attitude to have in general, I think. Then what about the reaction from fans? What's that been like? This is a beloved series, like probably the most beloved to Nintendo fans around the world, especially in the West, clearly. What has that been like?
It's been, it's changed my day to day. It's been really, really interesting, because I am on social media, and I've made myself available for fans if they want to reach out. So, there are both sides. You get people that are just like crazy coming at you, which is, there's, the trolling aspect of it as well, which is something that's new to me. I'm getting used to it now. You just have to sort of grow a bit of a thicker skin whenever you're sort of put in the public like that. You just have a lot coming at you. But I just get approached by people every day that just reach out, and they're so excited to tell me that they love me. And I'm just like, wow, how did this happen? It's really crazy. Like, a couple days ago, for example, somebody messaged me on my Facebook and said, you know, I just want you to know that I'm just so amazed by your work and I love you. And my kid, her first birthday was the launch of the Switch and of Breath of the Wild. And we named her Zelda. And I was like, oh, my gosh, send me a picture. I got a little selfie of this adorable infant in a Zelda shirt. Her name is Zelda. And I'm so moved by these things. Like, I just want to hug everybody.
That's a magical feeling, and I can only imagine it comes from, again, like, just being that kind of a franchise, like something so many folks have connected with. That's amazing, like, to just get to experience that, I must say.
It's really strange and magical. I'm like, how did this happen to me? And it's very humbling. Yeah. I mean, with the thousands of artists that put this franchise and this game together, and then people approach me first sometimes, and I'm like, whoa, hi. And yeah, I'm very appreciative of it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Are there any other memories that sort of stand out in your mind from the recording sessions? Like, sort of, and yeah, I'll leave that there first.
I'm trying to think.
Stories that stand out that, like, oh yeah, this one time.
I'm trying to think. I mean, like, I feel like all of them, every time I entered the studio, it was just a big deal for me. That's kind of, I love voice work. I love all the projects that I do. And I always skip to work with this kind of work. I'm like, da, 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 that, you know, I'm really happy to do it. But yeah, this one, the gravitas of being in the room and watching things unfold and just being in contact with everybody when that was happening. It was all really memorable. And I just, you know, you just want to grab onto everything with a project like this, because it's just really special in the scope of your career. And I ate a lot of green apples during this, more than I've ever eaten before. I love apples.
Yeah, what a curious choice.
Yeah, it's really good for the acid and the crackles in your mouth. Mm-hmm. So, lots of green apples for some reason.
Yeah. Any other sort of preparation or sort of style things in there?
Yeah, I did a fair bit of prep before I'd go in for my sessions each morning, just sort of warming up my timbers and stuff like that.
And how long was recording? Like, was this like day long? Like, or
so? Oh no, they do it in shorter chunks. So, like, I guess like 4 hour sessions, kind of standard sessions that you'd get for most video games, like roughly that. So it would depend. It'd be like maybe sometimes a 2 hour, sometimes a 4 hour. Never really more than that.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm very happy for you and to hear that a lot of folks have connected with it. That's a good thing, and that's great to hear. And I hope I look forward to the next bit of work that we know you'll be working on with Zelda. Really excited to learn more about what Nintendo sort of brings to that, because they've never done that for Zelda before. Not only has it not been voiced, we haven't had DLC. We haven't had something that continues that story. So I'm really excited.
Oh, thank you. Me too. It's a pleasure.
All right. So then tell the folks, how can they find you on social media, or what other things can they sort of look forward to you sort of putting out there?
Cool. I'm shooting some TV things. Actually, I can't even really say what they are yet, because they need to get approved. A couple of other games as well. I'm doing some motion capture on a pretty exciting game coming up. I'll be announcing all these things on my Twitter and Instagram. I'm pretty active on those these days, which is @Somerset_ for both of them. So
great. All right, awesome. Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on you, and lots of luck for your future endeavors.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, so there you have it, folks. We're going to switch over to our next segment, so don't go away. I'm Jose Otero. I'm joined by Brian Altano. I'm joined by Per Schneider. And really quickly, a bit of housekeeping for you. Fireteam Chat has a Destiny 2 blowout. This was a big week in video games because the Destiny reveal event went down. And so Bungie showed the first campaign mission called Homecoming, which our Fireteam Chat guys got hands-on with. They also got hands-on with the Inverted Spire, the new strike, and Crucible PvP, which apparently there's a new mode called Countdown that you should totally check check out, hear what these guys had to say. They all went and played it. There's a bunch of stuff going up on IGN.com right now. So remember, the podcast is Fireteam Chat. Make sure you check that out.
You're dying to play this, aren't you?
Of course I am. Yeah, yeah. As one of the guys who, like, yeah, I absolutely.
We used to play Destiny together a bunch. And then eventually, like, life caught up with me. And I'm like, you know, I just can't dedicate the hours anymore.
He was hooked,
and
though.
He kept, I think you played like 9,000 more hours.
I played a lot. Yeah, I still play today, even though I don't get too involved in our Destiny coverage as much. But I do want to transition us over then to talk about the other big event this week, which was there was an Arms Direct. And also a Splatoon 2 single-player campaign trailer, which we should talk about. Let's lead off with ARMS. I also got to play ARMS last Friday, so I saw some of this stuff. So just to briefly recap, the roster is now up to 10 fighters. They showed off Kid Cobra, Twintel, and Bark and Bite, which can best be described as Kid Cobra is this purple and green snake-like character that can kind of slither up and around punches. Twintel is basically Bayonetta in ARMS form. She has gloves on her hair. She sort of has pigtails and they swing out at people.
Oh, sweet.
And she's got an interesting physique. And then finally, there's Bark and Bite, who can best be described as a wind-up RoboCop with a canine little assistant.
I love that character right there so much.
I mean, one of ARMS' strengths is I'm leaving.
Are you kidding me?
It's the character design. Yeah, every character they show, like from the very first kind of reveal, I'm like, why does that guy have toothpaste for hair? Like, you see each character and they're quirky and they're strange, and one character is based on a bull of ramen. It's like they're so wacky, but I really think, like, aesthetically they look really cool. By the way, there's some sort of secret character in the background too. So they are obviously more than these 10 characters.
Well, and they said they're going to continue supporting this game with free updates post-launch, which includes new characters, new stages, and new arms, which that's the Splatoon treatment right there. And that is a smart way to sell a video game, because you're promising more and you're not charging people for it.
Right.
But what I really like is that the characters aren't just changed skins. They're actually unique, right? Like, with what is Bark and Bite, you've got a character that's like Master Blaster, right? That can come apart and get back together, kind of fight like that. You got this Mr. Flubber looking dude. Like, everybody is slightly different in how they feel and handle too.
Yeah. And they don't fall into genre tropes. Like, I remember that era in the 90s and even, in the 2000s where every popular fighting game had a knockoff version or knockoff versions of characters. It's the difference between like Street Fighter and Art of Fighting.
Yeah.
It's Virtual Fighter and Tekken went at it for years.
Well, let's be totally honest. Like, that it was also racist as hell.
it was.
In the 90s, they're like, oh, there's a ninja and an Italian and a Jamaican and here's the soft-spoken French guy.
No, absolutely. And the big surprise to me on playing it for the second time, because I did play it just for a little bit at the New York event, was that it's built around a Street Fighter-like system. It is very much about, you know, the triangle of punches beats throws, and throws beat blocks, and blocks beat punches. And it's that sort of triangle of figuring out how to best your opponent. It's nothing like Punch Out. Like, it is very much about your resources and your punches. They're precious. Like, the minute you let them fly, you want to get a hit because you're waiting for them to come back. This game is all about mobility.
It doesn't
and movement.
Slow it down too much?
I don't think so, because it's on you, right? Like, if you were silly enough to go 1-2, you are waiting for them to come back. But you can also use punches to control space. So you can fire, for example, like a chakra is this arm that has an arc, and you can send that over the left side, and while you're pushing that opponent to the right, then fire out an ice dragon that will fire and then hit him with a laser that can slow him down.
Yeah.
So there's different ways you can approach it, and if not, you can always hit the rush, and just that's when you flail and that's when you go nuts, like swinging at the.
I really liked your preview for this game.
Thanks.
It's the first thing I've read that like truly sold me on the marriage of motion controls and traditional controls that this is doing.
Yeah.
And I think that works with the ebb and flow of how conversational this game is, and sort of like, you know, you're yelling and then you're quiet, and then you're yelling and you're quiet and you're waiting and stuff like that. And the idea of like, you are throwing certain attacks with motion controls, but then you're moving and dodging with everything with traditional controls. Mm-hmm. I think it's very smart, and it's like you said, this is not Wii boxing, right? Oh, and I think it's very important to reiterate that. Like, and a lot of people who have seen seen this have been like, this looks like a game where you're just flailing around a lot. And I think if you're bad at it, that's maybe what it is. And that's how, when I first played it, that's how I did it. But I think there's a lot to be learned.
Absolutely.
It could be frustrating. If you're not being careful, you might be waiting a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it might not be as fast as you want it to be, but there's so many different options. And certainly, like, the curving is a really cool element, and when it works and you hit somebody, you feel really good about it.
Yeah.
My only worry, as always, are the motion controls after, you know, the Hadouken.
No, it's disaster, a way of the Hadouken. That specifically is sort of what I feel this game is pushing back on.
Yeah.
And I feel that, it's funny because there was a bunch of other like outlets there, and it feels like we were all in agreement that it felt good, right? Like, it didn't feel off. You at the same time, you're not there to like exaggerate and like throw your arm out. I will not name who at the event did that. That shame on you. That was really silly. To your point about curving punches, a lot of the additional modes seem designed around helping you get better at that. So they announced a mode called V-Ball, where it's basically volleyball, and you're trying to slap it into the other, like just like a game of volleyball. You're trying to smack the ball into the area. The ball will explode if it hits the ground, by the way, mm-hmm. so it'll damage them. But more importantly, you can reach over the net and just slap it to the other side. Like, you don't have to wait until the ball's on your side, which I think is hilarious.
That's awesome.
Then they have a mode called Hoops, which was my favorite. Maybe it's just because I grew up in the Bronx and playground basketball was a thing. But every time you go for a throw on a player and you're within the three-point arc, you will just slam dunk an opponent or put them through the hoop for 2 points. If you're beyond the three-point arc, you will fling them and just from downtown, just and put them through. That includes if you activate a special, you'll be able to launch them over there as well. And it's just a fun, silly, you feel completely disrespected when someone slam dunks you through the hoop. Like, I was just like, oh, man. Are you kidding? Wait till I get up. I'm going to handle this.
This sounds a lot like the Smash Brothers setup, though, where you have your kind of core mode and you have a single player mode, obviously, too. And then you have all these kind of slightly different, kind of more playful modes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think, and maybe this is the case with Smash, but I haven't thought about the modes this way. I just feel like this game is specifically trying to teach you a new skill. It is specifically trying to get you comfortable with the idea of sending out a projectile punch. It's very much a fighter meets a shooter in some respects. And I think that what I appreciate most about the modes is even the next one, Skill Shot, is very much you are sitting across a target range from an opponent and you're trying to hit more targets than he can or she can. And you can also take jabs at that person while they're playing to sort of free up some space. And the more targets you hit consecutively, the higher the bonus points for you. So these all just feel very carefully engineered. And then finally, there's one on 100, which is very much a Smash Brothers mode. Yep. But I think you're right, too. Like,
target practice. I mean, to me, like, I saw all the modes. I'm like, man, is this like, are they trying to harken back to Smash?
No, yeah, very much. That's a great observation. They also confirmed all the ways you can play it. So dual Joy-Con supported with motion control. You can play with attached Joy-Con on handheld mode. They didn't let us play it that way, though.
Okay.
I was very disappointed about that.
Attached Joy-Con on handheld mode.
Yeah, so basically like a handheld. Like,
No motion stuff.
No motion, yeah. It'll work that way. I know that based on impressions I read, I think Edge got hands-on with it when they did their cover story, sounds weird. Doesn't sound as fluid as the way motion feels.
Weird.
I know motion felt great. Yeah, I think that designing this game around this next controller option, which is you can play with a single Joy-Con, so you could do two on one system, and then it also supports Pro Controller. So every way you can play a Switch game, you can play it on here.
That's good.
Oh, that's so cool. Because I always like try to figure out where a game like this what bucket it falls into, right? Like, we were talking about Street Fighter earlier. Like, you couldn't do that motion control thing in bed or on the couch. Like, if you're in the kickstand mode and
you're waking up your wife, Hadouken!
You're on an airplane or a train, but this one sounds like it works in every configuration, but it seems like it predominantly leans towards motion being the best way of controlling it.
So far, all signs point to yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So can you talk about the single player? Like, is it story-based? Does it feel like a classic fighting game?
Yeah, so they have a mode called Grand Prix. They didn't let us try it, but apparently it's a road to the championship style thing. You have to fight 10 fighters. There's this mystery boss that sort of got hinted at in the direct, but they didn't really
no cutscenes, right? No story scenes?
I don't think so, but they did try to set up this direct with story. I mean, and I feel like in Splatoon even, you got like small bits of story through like some of those like signs and secret things you
thought. But here it's more told by little Mr. Fisthead or whatever, right?
Maybe. Like, I'm not sure. Character. Like, we didn't really get to experience it, so I don't know. I know that when they set the stage for like, well, in the beginning, it was...
to me, that's a hint that there is some of that in there, but Nintendo likes to make that stuff optional. They don't really force it. So you're right. If you finish the game, I wonder, do you get a cutscene and with your championship belt on? Like, is there a fun aspect like that? Not entirely sure. There is a global test punch. This is a big deal because it's happening twice. So the first weekend is May 26th, 27th, and 28th. Check arms.nintendo.com if you want to know the times. And then they're going to do it again the weekend after, June 2nd, June 3rd, and June 4th so in like, North America. If you're in Europe, it's Saturday and Sunday, not Friday, Saturday.
Just can, like Splatoon. So you can play it for free.
You can download it on your Switch right now.
Yes.
So preload it. You get the little icon of arms on your screen. While you're in the store, grab the Disgaea demo because that's there too. Hiding that. There and all your progress carries over to the full game. But this looks really cool, man. I'm super into this. I think that like the amount of single player stuff is and the extra modes are really good to hear because I think predominantly like I won't be playing local multiplayer, but we'll see how it pans out.
I'm curious about the online stuff too. And I saw the, you know, in the footage I saw the lobby, which is wacky. Like you have like 10 characters like filling a lobby, right? Was it even more?
It was up to 10 systems, 20, so two
up
per system.
20 people.
20 people in one lobby, and then you can jump around between different modes.
It has like the circles, you can put the characters together in circles to face off against each other. It was a really unique lobby system.
Yeah, I thought it was very
cool. Silent again, because the app is still not out, right?
Well, my other concern too is that, and we've talked about this on the show before, but I just want to reiterate, like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is fantastic to play, but the online experience is not great. And the fact that I'm not sure if a lot of folks, I'm imagining a lot of folks are complaining, but the reason you can't lobby too much because you're not paying for it. This is free. But regardless, it is below standard significantly. If I want to join a race with Brian, I have to hope that the gods and the systems and the servers align so that a path opens and I can just join his race. And I think that's embarrassing in today's era of video games where like everything is very carefully calculated, all about lobbying up and playing with other players. And this is the second multiplayer driven game coming out for Switch that is not going to have an infrastructure in place that should be there. It's frustrating to me.
Yeah, it feels like, I mean, Mario Kart, it feels like there are steps towards a better user experience. Like, I can, when you're on, and we're friends, when you're on, I can see you online and I can hit the join Jose button, but then it spins the Wheel of Fortune, right? Like, even if you're in a race with eight players only, there's a chance that I might not get in a bunch of times before the gods deem it worthy of you to join.
And so they just patched Mario Kart recently, where now up to two people can spectate waiting for to join a race instead of just one. I think that was a big reason for the collision that may help the problem. But I still feel that if your strategy was to lean into these very online, community-driven games, it is more and more a sign that your online needs to get out there. Now, we've all speculated Splatoon 2 will be when the chat app appears and will start to sort of be this free option for you to try before you buy. And then they talk about how much it costs somewhere between August and the fall when they finally start laying out, okay, here's what our online is. But until then, you are leaving players in a pool that doesn't feel like it's right.
Yeah. And not to make excuses for Nintendo, but, you know, the first two games, you know, Mario Kart and, you know, and ARMS are competitive. And so I feel like the chat is it's valuable for friends hanging out in a lobby. It's not as valuable for the actual gameplay. Splatoon, it's a must. That's a team-based game.
Right.
So the ability to communicate with your teammates is much more important.
Yeah, but even with Mario Kart, right, that you were talking about the cops team and mode, robbers mode. Yeah, it's like specifically.
No, that's
like
true,
That Renegade Roundup is all about that. I just think if this it's time. Switch is a hot platform, which we guess quickly should talk about that it was the best-selling console for the month of April in the United States, according to the NPD Group, sold over 280,000 units in the month of April. Comparison, launch month, which started March 3rd until the end of March, was 906,000. Mm-hmm. So definitely signs of Nintendo not getting enough product out the door. That's a difference of over 600,000 units.
Yep.
that's a shame. Granted, they weren't going to have another 900,000 for April. That's not the point. Point is, you need more systems in the ecosystem. Roughly, though, we can estimate that 1,186,000 Switch owners are in the U.S. alone.
Demand's there. And, I mean, the Mario Kart sales figures, over 500,000 sold in, like, the first 2 days. Just shows you, there's a lot of demand for this thing. People are snapping up the games. Now some third parties are probably kicking themselves in the butt that they weren't there at launch.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a gamble that may have paid off for some, right?
Well, I mean, we've heard the sort of, like, you know, we remain dedicated to the blah, 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 and the wait and see approach, right? Yep. Well, here we are, you know? Like, when we saw the wait and see approach, they waited, and they saw when it came to Wii U, and they left.
Nope, they show up for the Switch presentation, they kiss the ring, all right, we're out.
We even saw, like,
back.
I mean,
later.
Ubisoft the other day, they said, oh, we actually have more Switch products in development. They said they have one that they haven't announced yet.
Oh, I wonder what...
That's weird.
What is it? Oh,
what do you think it is?
I don't know. Maybe something about Luigi. No, it's a Zelda crossover.
Good.
Zelda and Rayman are finally.
I was hoping we'd get a new Zelda this year.
Yeah, there it is. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe sold 550,000 units, as Per said. 460,000 were physical copies, according to NPD, and 90,000 were digital.
I think that's
feels low.
What, for digital?
Yeah.
I was saying this, and I got into a conversation with some of the people in the Nintendo Voice Chat Facebook group, which you can join. Just talking about, like, the preferences when it comes to physical and digital on something like the Nintendo Switch. As I get older, I want less and less sort of, like, physical clutter when it comes to discs and cartridges and stuff like that. But I understand the appeal of collectors, and especially the Nintendo fans, are people that have grown up with collections of games. Sure. It's something they've seen since a very young age or their entire lives, and so I will never downplay that. So I think it's really interesting to see, whereas I think if Mario Kart or a racing game of its caliber were to launch on a competitive console, I think you'd see a lot closer split in digital and physical. And I think on Nintendo side, people just really want that cartridge. And plus, the box art's awesome, you know? Yeah, and Switch cases are so cute. Like, I totally get it.
Yeah, I will say, though, if I was a retailer, namely Target, I may have grounds to be a little annoyed with Nintendo, only because as part of my weekend adventures, checking out, like, different stores.
Yeah, I love that you do that.
Saramonte and wherever your nearest mall is, if you're in the peninsula area of San Francisco.
You saw
there are a lot of aisle displays packed to the gills with copies of Mario Kart 8. But no Switches.
Right.
And
Target, it's more than just the aisles. Target has, like, freaking, like, Mario balls.
Yeah. They have, like,
a parking lot.
Yeah. They have a bunch of product around. And I just hope that, and Mario Kart 8's an instant purchase, right? Yeah. Like, the minute someone picks up a Switch, I think that the numbers already show they're gravitating towards that game. It makes you wonder, too, if when Nintendo looks at Mario Kart, are they happy? Is it a job well done? Should they have done DLC? Like, those questions are going to linger. They're answering that question already with ARMS. So we know ARMS is getting free DLC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With Mario Kart, it was just port it, move on. Let's just keep moving forward. So far, it seems to be that.
Until the thing just keeps on selling and they say, can't we release some more DLC packs?
Animal Crossing could get one 3 years later.
Never. Yeah.
Anything is possible.
I never say never.
I remind you all of the Smash Brothers will never have DLC statements before Smash Brothers came out.
We had a lot of fights on how they would
sure
do it.
Got a lot of DLC.
If you're watching or listening and you're one of those millions of people that is trying to get a Switch, keep trying. You know, do all the things we said a couple weeks ago on the show. Yep.
Go back and listen to it.
It's hard. It's difficult. I have, like, anecdotally, I have friends from the East Coast that just sort of send me texts. They're like, how do I get my kid one of these Switches? Or, like,
they're on the East Coast, send them to the Nintendo World store.
Oh,
Nintendo
interesting.
New York. Nintendo World New York has us. When I was in New York 2 weeks ago for the 2DS XL, sorry, I'm going to jump right back to you. I went 2 different days of that week. They had a healthy pile of Switches
behind
the counter on the first floor.
But if you live in the U.S. as well, remember there are other options, right? The Japanese Switch has the same AC adapter, the same, you can switch the thing to English. So if you're desperate and you need one, especially with some unique looking bundles now coming out, you might might want to look at Amazon Japan some
other. Apparently they're really easy to find in Australia too. Like, it's very odd how the chips fall. With all this stuff, but
it makes you wonder how distribution is looking. Interesting. So there was a Splatoon 2 trailer, but actually before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about some of these accessories Per mentioned.
Yeah, sure.
So there's actually some pretty cool Switch accessories, which we're going to throw into the video version of the podcast. We will do a better job of trying to explain what they are if you are an audio listener, but if you are an audio listener who is interested in seeing them, you can... I love these photos. You can head on over to youtube.com/NintendoVoiceChat and check them out. So first we have the sort of Splatoon 2 bento box all in one package that you can basically fit a dock, a system, a couple games, controllers, the AC adapter. It all fits in this neat little lunch pail that looks like it fits right in front of a bicycle.
Yeah.
In Japan, they have the little bike baskets.
Yeah. Outside of like backpacks and stuff, I think this is the largest, sort of most robust first party carrying case we've seen for the Switch that actually has room for the dock and has room for everything else.
And look at that zipper. Oh my. Like the zippers are fantastic because it's the little squids. Inklings.
Yeah, especially
the
cool
a purple inkling squid and a neon purple and a neon green.
The cool running theme with a lot of these new carrying cases and just general Switch cases is that they all have this little rubber keychain hanging off the side of them, and they're all themed differently based on the games that they're celebrating, which I think is great.
Yeah, they are fantastic. So this is 280 yen, which was roughly the equivalent of $23, depending on the state of the exchange rate. Then they announced, and this was announced a couple weeks ago, this didn't come with the Splatoon or ARMS information that came this week. There's a case for Switch that is ARMS themed, another one that is Zelda themed, and then finally one that is Mario Kart themed. The ARMS one is my favorite.
Awesome.
It is
entirely yellow. I like that one. It has really nice detail, but it's not overdoing it with multiple colors. And then the zipper is Springman's arm, essentially.
It's a boxing glove on an arm.
Boxing glove with his springy, with what is the blue and purple coil.
The funny thing is it's like a big neon yellow case that just says ARMS across it.
What?
And the three of us have said that so many times that we get it. But like to the uninitiated, like it's some kid walks in, it's like, ARMS?
I want ARMS stickers for all my extremities.
Again, ARMS are guns.
Yeah.
Like,
I see.
Those
guns. Like these?
Yeah. If you're listening, Jose's kissing his muscles.
His bicep. Or what's left of it. There is a Zelda case as well for Breath of the Wild. It is sort of a white on gray, black design. It's
pretty cool, too.
Link, in the pose that you saw around the DLC, when the DLC was announced, there's a very particular pose Link's in, and over his shoulder behind him is a guardian.
Mm-hmm.
And the zip is a little tiny
little
Sheikah
rubber Sheikah slate.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
Oh man, I want it.
And
I want
finally,
one on my keys.
Yeah, and finally, actually, I had one on my keys and I lost it because they don't snag too well. Yeah, they had it at GameStop. In all of these weekend travels, I got to buy something. So I bought that and I was like, why did I buy this? There's a Mario Kart 8 Deluxe case as well. Bit too colorful for my taste.
It's like underpants.
It's mostly a black design background with a bunch of character illustration and decals going across it. They're all sort of angled at the same direction.
It's my favorite one.
And
oh, no, you like the underpants one?
No, I don't like the underpants one. I like the Mario Kart one.
I don't think it's as bad as Pear says either, but Pear's not a fan.
It doesn't say ARMS across it.
Hey,
underpants.
Oh, you know what? All right, fine. This case looks like
It's fine. But it's when are we going to get this in the U.S.?
I love that one.
So far, nothing. What Japan gets it July 28th, and these cases are each roughly $34, $35. So ain't cheap.
Not cheap.
Just like your iPhone or your accessory cases. Finally, and this is my favorite because it comes in several pieces, but there's already one of these in the U.S. Technically, I think a third-party manufacturer makes it, but think of, for your iPad, you had like that fold-over case that just sort of just protects the screen.
A little magnetic one.
So this looks like that, but at the same time, you can use it to prop the Switch up as a kickstand mode and position it so you can, guess what? Charge it
and play.
Oh, that's
while
awesome.
And charge at the same time.
That's really cool.
It looks nice, and it has separately, or maybe it's included, a privacy filter. I wonder why Switch needed that.
I don't know. What's coming out in Japan, Jose?
Some grabby garbage game called Senran Kagura. That's right. I said it. if you ever see the trailer for this thing, if you're into that, I'm not going to judge.
So this is for people who want to play it on the subway and don't want people judging them. Okay.
Silent judgment always, but yes. Okay. And that's not to, we've lost Brian. Oh God, that's good.
I don't like grabby garbage game.
Jose's a big fan.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm not a fan. And
look, regardless of what we feel about that genre of games, maybe just don't play it somewhere where people can see it.
No, now you can, though. Now you can.
No, but it doesn't mean you should.
I'm just going to stop before I get us in trouble. All right. And that's it, at least on the accessories front. There's a Splatoon 2 bundle in Japan.
Ooh, that's what I'm talking about.
Neon purple, neon green.
Oh, they're really good looking.
So there's one that they're bundled together with a system and the game. Not announced in North America. Sorry, kids.
Do I have to buy the system to get the freaking Joy-Con?
No, they sell them separately, too, in Japan.
Okay, Pear's already doing the math about, like, how do you get two greens and two purples?
Well, I got the yellow ones coming already, so I'm going to have...
You're going to have 12 two red, Joy-Con, two blue, 10 Joy-Con in your house?
Two red, two blue, four gray, two yellow, and then I got to get the Splatoon ones.
That's 12.
That is more controllers than, more controllers than systems can ever hold them.
At least you can go over to Pear's house with just the tablet. And
I hope you don't judge like your wife for buying shoes or bags.
She has two shoes for every color in the spectrum of the rainbow.
Okay, so good. So okay. buy your
not the main colors, everything in between.
Get your Joy-Cons.
So that's my revenge is little plastic controllers.
Everywhere. That'll show her.
They're just going to be a
whole. She'll learn her lesson.
Clearly. All right. So moving on, there was a Splatoon 2 single player trailer that we should talk about. This was really cool. If you remember, Splatoon 1 had the same thing, had a campaign. It was very abstract and different than the multiplayer that you played, right? Yep. There was a lot of cool skill test ideas like platforms that moved and, you know, having to sort of illuminate your path by using ink. There was cool stuff like that. This trailer kicks off with a new social space, which might be Inkopolis Plaza, I'm not sure, or just a sort of different section of town.
Right.
What makes me think it could be is just that it seems to have taken place in the future. This is after the Splatfest, the final Splatfest, where Callie and Mari went against each other, and Mari ends up winning. Callie disappeared. I think there's this.
I love
whole
how they
Squid
built
Sisters
this. It's
drama.
Like wrestling. They built this wrestling. Story.
There's a Squid Sisters story on Nintendo's Tumblr. You should check that out for Splatoon. And they've been building up that these two had a rift, but you find out that Mari's on her own. No one seems to remember her because she's like, "You remember me? I'm Mari." And she does the hands thing,
right?
And the Inkling does not even.
The Inkling's like what?
Not different generation. It's a very cute moment before they kick into the quirky music that I love about Splatoon, and specifically the levels and the design themselves, which look fantastic.
The single player trailer is it's just nuts.
Yeah.
It's completely crazy. I mean, like, just looking at the different character designs, I mean, there's some humanoid enemy that pops in, and then there's an oven popping out bread, right? Like, it's just complete bonkers what you see.
And you guys, I mean, you guys know, as you try to rattle my cage to get me to play a ton of Splatoon last time around, I'm not the biggest online multiplayer guy, but between the single player campaign, which looks gorgeous and crazy and is giving me major, like, vibes of Mario Galaxy 2, and the Horde mode that they're adding now.
Yes,
that,
Salmon Run.
Yeah. I feel like I'm totally buttoned up on justifying a purchase of this game just on those things for single player stuff.
Yep. You love it, man.
Yeah.
I'm not someone who plays a ton of versus multiplayer. I play a lot of co-op, but this game, I just kept on going back to. And obviously it's team-based, so you're playing with friends against strangers too. And this looks like, you know, it's got all the multiplayer stuff we love from the first one, and then the single player looks stronger this time around. Like it's just mechanically, like, it seems to have so many more like toys you can interact with. You saw where the Inkling is splatting some sort of roll that can roll out of the way.
They had a moment too where you're like riding the trail of what looks like you're riding a trail of ink that's being left behind by a rocket that's floating ahead of you. And so it's just this really cool, almost Jet Set Radio moment. Which there is a part of the community that loves a mashup idea between these two franchises, because they very much have sort of a similar contemporary, futuristic, but wild and wacky sort of atmosphere.
Similarity in music, too.
Yeah, so wacky. Splatoon 1's campaign specifically drops the ball on weapon variety.
Yes.
You basically were sort of only sticking with the most basic forms. And I feel like this game is already off to a great start, because you saw a lot of weapon variety in the trailer.
Yep.
And you even saw something that in the middle of the trailer, shows up roughly within the beginning, you know, there's a Sheldon request. So if you don't remember who Sheldon is, that is the shellfish that sells you weapons. Way too chatty. Someone needs to shut that kid up. But in Splatoon 1, but you can basically have new weapons sort of dropped in the middle of a match, and you'll have your Gatling gun, you'll have your ink brushes, your octo brushes, whatever you need, like, will show up. I don't know entirely how they're going to balance that, but the variety alone has me excited, because on the first game, they locked that behind Amiibo, and I didn't like that very much. Like, there were specific challenges that involved specific weapons. You had the splat charger, or you had the roller, or I can't remember what the third one was. But regardless, I just was not satisfied with that.
Right.
So I feel like this is already off to a much better start. Lastly, they showed a boss that looked like a stack of ovens, complete with pop-out bread that comes out during the attack.
And it all has, like, faces, and it's the weird, like, square that tries to squash you. Too,
yeah,
like,
and there was an octoling, a really oversized octoling on a tiny little unicycle, and they end with him swinging a splat roller at the camera, which I just thought was really funny, because they also do this great synchronization of and you're like, oh my god,
no. they're having a ton of fun with this franchise. Yep. Yeah. It shows from the character design to the art direction to the music and colors and everything like that. The fact that the single player in the first one felt like a little safe, which is an odd word to use to describe a game about squids turning into paint, but here we are. But the second one feels completely off the rails in the best ways possible. I'm really excited to see what they do with this thing. It just looks really creative.
I mean, unlike Nintendo hasn't created a ton of new characters over the years that kind of stuck with us, right? Like, if you go back to, like, you know, Mario, Zelda,
even Pikmin,
Metroid.
Doesn't really have a great, like, that's one of the more new examples of a character that never really hit that strongly outside of a passionate group of people.
In Japan, like, the Pikmin are very much beloved, right? Like, the small characters. Olimar, though, is kind of the cipher of the series. But, like, the Splatoon characters, I feel like they're really good.
Yeah.
Like, just the, you know, kind of like the brattiness of them, the way they look, the squids, like the really bright colors, like, it owns those crazy, like, soda pop colors and everything. And then the music, like, you can't, I don't really know another game that sounds like that.
Yeah. And it very much, I wonder if it captures just that vibe of that tween teen culture, right? Like, just very sort of, like, showy and look
it's
at what,
like,
I'm wearing.
Well, I don't give a crap.
And
right?
it's drama. Yeah.
But it's done really well. And I feel like authentically, it's cute, and they're lovable characters. And then every single shopkeeper is just so weird and quirky on top of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the music in the trailer already sounds awesome again.
Yeah, no,
I
can't wait. I think the only thing, Nintendo, that you need to address with Splatoon 2 is that multiplayer has real changes behind it. Because when we saw it at the very first global test fire, we saw a product that, despite new stages and despite a new style, roughly, right? I mean, new pieces of style in terms of hair and in terms of some weapons and tweaks and balances, in fairness. It's still a system that I can't change loadouts between matches, that I have to back out in order to do X, Y, or Z. And I just feel like the smarter way to approach this is to make sure that folks have that flexibility. If you're balancing the game for that reason, and that's why you don't want people to change weapons in between them, be upfront about that, because right now you haven't said anything.
Yeah. Right. And the Mario Kart fixed that particular issue. You can actually change your kart and your setup in between. You can even turn off the crazy yellow little antenna in between matches when you're playing online. And so they obviously thought about it, and Splatoon is the game that needs it the most.
I think so, yeah, especially for one that you can tell, especially in Japan, they're going to push and really try to make a success. The first game did super well for them there. And that's our show. We got through it all. Another one in the books for Nintendo Voice Chat.
Ding.
Yeah.
Hey, Jose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Finally, there was, besides getting flipped up by my boss on a podcast while I'm shuffling through
papers. That means nothing. That's what the Inklings do.
So apparently, there was an update for Mario Kart 8 that, among some of the tweaks and changes, which included the spectator thing I brought up, removed a gesture that naughty, naughty little Inkling girl was doing.
Did you notice that? Yeah, I used to do this gesture all the time when I was a kid.
I grew up in Italy. You weren't supposed to do this gesture, but just like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, man.
She would only do that if she passed a character. It was removed and altered. I don't think people are that angry. I can't tell.
Give it a minute.
It's still young. the issue is still new on the internet. No, I mean, I think Nintendo just didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and culturally, the gesture means different things in different countries, and most people don't care, right? And like, it comes across as just her going like, like, you know, she's doing the reaction guy.
Well, that's all she does now. She just, she raises her fist, which
that's it.
Still indicates angry driver, but not as angry.
You're right. I mean, I never even like noticed it. Like, I noticed the gesture and I never thought about it twice.
No,
a middle finger would have been something you immediately.
Well, I mean, Jose and I are from the East Coast. The middle finger is still like a wave at that point. Once they start cursing and dropping F-bombs on each other on the FDR drive, that's a different story entirely.
Entirely.
Yeah, it's a Jersey hello.
It is. It is a Jersey hello.
The Jersey hello got removed.
It's endearing, you know?
No. Yeah.
But definitely make sure you update, and hopefully it will solve some of these spectator issues, too.
And if you miss it, just head on over to the most beautiful state, New Jersey.
There we have it. All right, well, thank you for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat, and don't forget that we are a weekly show here on IGN, and that there are multiple ways that you can keep up with us. First of all, obviously, on the IGN.com homepage, just click on over to shows, head down to Nintendo Voice Chat. If not, you may see a clip-out version of this show on YouTube.com/IGN, but you can catch full episodes on YouTube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. It's ours, and we're not giving it back. Finally, you can leave us feedback. Head on over and send us an email to MVC@IGN.com, or just write us a review on your podcast platform of choice. We try to keep up with all of it. And thanks for another great show, guys. Like, we did it. We made it. Make sure you check out Fireteam Chat's Destiny 2 reveal. I'm telling you, it's cool stuff. I'm excited. Paris slightly excited. Brian does not care, but that's okay.
No, it's good to see you guys happy.
All right, fair enough.
Go watch Link Together with Zach Ryan. We put up a great episode today.
And there you have that, too. Finally, you can find us all on Twitter. You can find Brian Altano at
Agent Bizzle.
You can find Paris Schneider at
Paragin.
And you can find myself, Jose_Otero. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.